This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over...
I love you, man. No, I love you, man.
So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one and we'll catch you next time.
Hey there, gentle listeners.
Are you ready for...
One dry kiss? For one dry kiss?
For one dry kiss?
For... One dry kiss. How are we saying it?
I thought that we would say it like, I don't know, regular?
That was regular. All of those ways that I did those was perfectly regular. For one dry kiss.
For one dry kiss?
For one dry kiss. For okay, maybe I was trying to say it a little sultrally. For one dry kiss.
There you go.
Yes. Okay, I do it on the count of three. Ready? One, two, three.
For one dry kiss.
Maybe we should go back to the singing. Oh,
I have faith in us.
No, I don't. That makes one of us. That's right, gentle listeners. Get your lip balm out and press those lips real, real tight because we are back from our month off and we are here to bring you all the dry kisses.
Ooh.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss. Our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies, where we just pour the movie right into your ear holes. And I am here today to tell my co-host, Corinne Edding, I love you, man.
Oh!
But you didn't let me finish. Oh. Is the movie that we're doing today.
Oh! I was about to feel real good about life, but apparently not so much. It's fine, though. It's fine.
I would definitely say I love you, but I wouldn't call you man. I think I'd leave that part off. It would be I love you, bro chacho, like they said.
And I am here with my bestie, better than the restie, who brought in February, a.k.a. Friend-uary. The movie about... besties, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Was it my idea for Friend-uary?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I take all the credit then. It was a great idea. Thanks, Tamara.
You're brilliant.
Yes.
One of the many reasons why I love you.
And I love you too, muchacha. I love you too. Amiga, I love you too. Corinne. I'm like Peter Klavan in this movie. I swear to God, I resonated with him so much. But anyways.
Who's Peter Klavan?
He is Paul Rudd's character.
Oh, Peter. Right. Peter Klavan. I'm sorry. I thought you were using an actor's name. You were using the character in the movie's name. I did watch the movie today, gentle listeners, and my name retention skills are at about zero. So there you go. I have a big question for you, though, Tam.
What's that?
Was your month of January?
I was going to ask you the same damn thing and you just beat me to it. Let's see. What happened? Read a lot of books, watched a lot of movies, listened to a lot of podcasts, and I have some recommendations. But Corinne, how was your vacation? What did you get up to?
Jeez, you leave me like on tenterhooks. I'm like, what? You have recommendations? I can't wait.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you know what? I watched a rom-com that I really liked over the holiday saison, and it was not even seasonal. Love at First Sight.
Is there a blind person in it?
No, there is not.
Okay.
Two strangers falling in love on a flight to London is a sturdy little romantic drama, says the New York Times.
Is there sleep masks involved?
Potentially.
I'm trying to get the gist of the title. Usually there's like a little twist on why it would be love at first sight. Unless it's a Hallmark movie.
Well, because they see each other. And when they see each other, bing, 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 bing. Hard eyes.
Because really think of a better title than love at first sight. Speaking of good titles.
Yes. Excellent segue.
One of the books that I read that I really enjoyed over the holiday was Demon Copperhead.
Oh, that does have a good title. It has such a good title that when Tamara recommended it to me, I downloaded the book immediately.
Yes, it is a coming of age story. And I apparently love coming of age stories because right after I heard it and I liked it so much, I also listened to The Goldfinch, which was an audiobook. Also a coming of age story, as I said before. Spoiler, if you want to read either of these books, please bypass the next 30 seconds. In both books, both of the main characters get addicted to pills.
You ruined it for me. No, I don't care.
I'm like, hey, how is this a fucking coming of age? Oh, and then you're an addict. Oh, but then you get out of it. Okay, well, that was fun. It was just so weird that I got two coming of age books. And then I think I told you that The Goldfinch was like 32 hours long because everybody and their mama is taking January off from podcast land, including us. And so there was like no podcast to listen to. So The Goldfinch was the longest book that I can find at a 32-hour time limit. And it sucked balls because, spoiler alert again, keep on scrolling if you don't want to hear this. At 8 years old, the main character loses his mom in a museum explosion in a very tragic accident.
I hate it when that happens.
I know. It was bad, but then you're like sitting in his absolute grief for like 9 hours because the book's so long. So you're just like sitting there wallowing with him. And I'm like, I don't think I have to stop it and come back to it. And I've never had to do that before.
Oh, I also saw the most unhinged episode of Law and Order SVU.
Oh, do tell.
Amazing. Okay. The guest stars for this, Carol Burnett and Matthew Lillard.
Wow.
Matthew Lillard is the nephew of Carol Burnett. And they have like a little like.
You shut your fucking mouth. You shut your fucking mouth. They made out? Matthew Lillard and Carol Burnett made out?
It was heavily implied that they did the funky monkey with each other. I'm just saying. And he was playing this like little simpering guy who's like, oh, whatever you want. It was so he was channeling Norman Bates. He was channeling like he had great Norman Bates energy. Carol Burnett was everything. It was a moz.
I can't even picture that. Tell me where I could watch this immediately.
Hulu. You can watch it on Hulu.
Oh, see. Okay. Is it like a recent one or is it one from years back or?
Okay. Wait. I can get real specific with you in just a moment. Just a second.
Pulling up my Hulu right now as we speak.
IMDb. I was not expecting to see a Carol Burnett, Matthew Lillard combo. It was just incredible. Okay.
So there's so many. There's
there's like 22 seasons or 25 seasons, something like that. I can help you just a second. Season 10, episode 16. Carol Burnett plays an ex-ballerina. It's called Ballerina from 2009.
Okay. All right. Well, I know what I'm doing after we finish here.
Oh, just like text me while you're watching it. It's amazing.
I also binge watched Night Sky. In addition to my new love for coming of age stories, I have a fondness now for movies with older characters, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And so Night Sky had J.K. Simmons and Sissy Spacek as an elderly couple that just happened to have a portal to outer space under their shed in the yard.
Oh, it's like Cocoon all over again. I like it.
Yes, it's very different from Cocoon, but it's just like I started watching it and I was like, what the fuck? And then I thought it was a movie, like silly me, like half asleep, just trying to find something to watch. And then it gripped me and I started watching it and I was like, what the heck is going to happen? And then I realized it wasn't a movie. It was a series. And I was like, well, shit, now I have to follow through. Watched all 8 episodes. And then when it got to the 8th episode, I'm like, ah, fuck, there's a second season. And now I have to wait for the second season.
Of course. They just leave you hanging.
They do. I'm like, oh, a cool movie. Oh, a cool series. Fuck you guys. Really have to wait. Like how long? Nobody better pass away. I swear to God.
Oh, gosh. No, particularly neither of them.
They are gems.
Yes, and I have such a deep and abiding love for J.K. Simmons, who happens to be in this movie that we are
doing. And another reason why I'm like, he is either the biggest grumpy curmudgeon or I want him to be my dad. Like how he was in Juno. We've also done Juno. He was like the world's greatest dad in that one, or pretty far up there. Maybe not the world's greatest dad, but he was up there.
He's pretty good in this one, too.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
Agreed. Speaking of this one, Corinne, do you have a synopsis?
Boy, howdy, do I ever. We're doing the kissing booth, right?
If you did the outline and want to do the whole movie by yourself, where you talk over me around
okay,
my eyes,
that no,
we weren't supposed
kidding.
To watch that movie. We weren't supposed to do that until next. Corinne, but did you do this again so you could just have the whole spotlight to yourself? We've talked about this, but none of the gentle listeners are going to hear this because you're going to be talking over me the whole time.
No. I prepped my I Love You Man notes, and Tamara, you lovingly wrote the script. Thank you very much. You did a bang up job. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Tamara wrote me a little love note. Says, Corinne, it's been such a long time since you've done a synopsis. Why don't you show us how it's done? And I'm like, yes, motherfuckers, I will show you how it's done. Peter, played by Paul Rudd, has been walking through his life playing it safe. And he's one of those people whose only friend is his significant other. Well, when he overhears Zoe, played by Rashida Jones, is his fiance's. When he overhears, okay, I did not know how to phrase the sentence, so I'm halfway showing you how it's done. When he overhears Zoe's friends, but Zoe is played by Rashida Jones, thank you very much, commenting about how Peter doesn't have any friends, his stomach drops and he realizes, dun, 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 they're right. Shit. So Peter goes on a journey to remedy the situation and find at least one bestie all his own. Will he triumph and find a friendship that will transcend all others? Or will he be all alone on Friendship Island? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Does he get sent to Friend Island, or does he exile himself to Friend Island, or is he just on a figurative island because he's alone?
He's on an island where everybody's like friends, and then he's just all by himself, feeling very, very sad. And I have definitely felt that way at a lot of parties, so I get it.
So he is a rock. He is an island.
Yes.
Also applies. Okay.
Now, Miss Tamara, mm-hmm. are you ready to get us going on this friendship, friendsuary journey? That is.
Uh-huh.
I love you, come a man.
Yes, I am. Here we go. Peter Klavan, played by Paul Rudd, drives his girlfriend Zoe, played by Rashida Jones, to an empty lot on the outskirts of downtown L.A. It's nighttime. The skyscrapers are lit behind them, while Peter explains his big plans to develop this property. He lists all of them to her, including a second location for her store. She's thrilled. Her BFF/business partners were just talking about expanding their locations.
Ooh.
She's supportive until he adds, it'll be a while before I can develop it, but I figured once I sold the Ferrigno house, there'll be enough for a down payment on the place, and I'll still have enough for the reception in Santa Barbara.
Ferrigno as in Lou Ferrigno? The Hulk?
Oh, yes. I down the way, every time I said Lou Ferrigno, I said AKA the Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
And gentle listeners, if you don't know who Lou Ferrigno is, please look, just pause here and look him up, because his story is pretty fucking epic. He dressed as a green man in a 70s TV series.
Oh, impeccable. Yes.
A very buff green man. So you get a little eye candy in there. I guess it's apple flavored because he's green, but whatever, you know, still. Enjoy. Zoe asks, what reception? What are you talking about? And before you know it, Peter's on one knee proclaiming that he is madly, wildly, ridiculously in love with Zoe. And even though they've only been together for 8 months, it feels so right.
My parents got married after 3, so, you know, hey.
I know. That's like, that was a surprise to me when I was talking to Barbara about one of my couple friends that got together really, really quickly. And I'm like, they're just rushing into it. They don't understand all the, you know, the dedication and the commitment and the things you need to know about people before you actually get in a relationship. And your mom looks at me and she goes, me and Joe got together after 3 months. And I'm like, I'm just going to see myself out now, because how do you argue with that? Peter thinks it's right, too, because he proposes to Zoe, asks for her hand in marriage, and she says yes. We cut to the newly engagers, if that's even a word.
It is now.
And Zoe is excitedly calling her friends on Peter's car phone. I think this was, when was it, like early aughts, when not everybody had like cell phones?
2009, I think.
Yeah. When the cell phone, you had cell phones, but they were ridiculously expensive. So she's using Peter's and she's excitedly calling all her friends to break the good news. First, she calls her bestie Haley, who squeals with delight but admits that she's super jealous because she's perpetually single, has been on 1 million dates with losers, and Zoe lands a really nice guy who just randomly walked into their store. Haley is currently, as she takes this call, on a date with a guy who seems perfectly nice. And as he hears her say this, he's like, I thought we were connecting. And she says, really? No. Which kind of sucked.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, Haley, it is no wonder you are single. If you're like, if you're like, it's a nice restaurant too. Like, they're in a nice restaurant. Yeah. And she's like, oh, hey, yeah, so I'm just going to talk. Don't mind me. I'm just going to talk on the phone with my friend for a while. Okay.
Mm-mm. So next time you go on a date, I'm going to call you and just talk about random shit. And you see how the guy acts while you're on the phone. And then that'll tell you if he's the one.
You know what? If he walks off, it'll tell me he's the one because he has boundaries. And some self-respect.
We're going to have to test this theory.
Yes.
Wait. So then you just have to reconcile. How do you reconcile?
It was a test. It was just a test.
So you can prove it too, because you could just chase him down the street. And when he's like, get away from me, you could just turn your phone screen and you'll have it written there. Like, it was just a test and you passed. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Anyways, Zoe chuckles because Haley doesn't realize that she's on speakerphone. And Haley conferences in their other BFF, Denise, who also squeals with excitement and then bitches Zoe out for not calling her first. She's kidding, not kidding. And do we want to describe Denise's marital situation? Because she's at home with her husband.
Oh, sweet baby Jeebus. Okay. You know that couple that always fights everywhere they are? That's Barry and Denise's situation.
Yeah.
But they also, along with that fighting, is the passions of the makeup.
Yes.
But Denise is with someone who, I'm going to guess, none of her friends actually like her husband. So,
yeah, I would say so, but it's they all say that they do. But I mean, I don't even like him, and he's just a dick.
And I question whether Denise actually likes her husband. I think it's more that they have really good sexual chemistry together when they when they go around do the bed dance, as one is wont to say, that popular term, do the bed dance.
The bed dance. You can dance if you want to. You can leave your friends behind. If your friends don't dance, and if you don't dance, no friends of mine. Anyways, we got to get back to Peter and Zoe, though.
Okay.
Denise's fucked up relationship. We know why Haley's perpetually single. But Zoe informs her friends that they're getting married and the wedding's going to be a few months away. And Peter's already booked a place in Santa Barbara where they had a long romantic weekend. Haley and Denise gush at the romance of it all and then exchange sexual details about Zoe and Peter as if they're swapping baseball stats. Names, dates, positions. Haley says, oh, that's where you guys fucked first. And Denise corrects, no, that was oral because Zoe was on her period. They fucked in Mexico. But who cares, because Peter's a doll who goes down on you like 6 times a week. Peter gets noticeably uncomfortable at the very specific details Zoe's friends know about their sex life. Zoe notices and quickly gets off the phone before they spill any more shared, sordid sexual details.
Oh, good times. I would date Peter in a hot second, and I would hold on to him.
Fuck yeah. And especially when you see his house, which is where we're going next.
The couple arrives home to their beautiful shared Hollywood Hills home that's worth a couple of $1 million.
Probably back then, it's probably worth way more now. Just saying.
Zoe's phone calls continue while Peter opens a bottle of champagne. She realizes she's been hogging the phone and offers it to Peter so he can tell people about the engagement. Why isn't he blowing up the world with his phone? Mm-mm. Well,
I know why, but I'm not telling you yet.
Okay, fine. He declines. His parents are probably asleep, so he'll tell them tomorrow. She peppers him with suggestions for other people he talks about on a regular basis. Tevin, his coworker, Jilliam, his fencing partner. But he shoots them all down, saying, they're not really tell right away friends, a.k.a. they're just acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
And Tevin, we have yet to meet Tevin, but Nope. What in the blonde frosted tips hell is going on there? No.
We find out very quickly why Tevin's not Peter's friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
The champagne cork pops and Zoe's still smiling, but there's a slight look of worry or concern on her face. A few nights later, Peter and Zoe are having dinner at Peter's parents' house, and the question gets posed to Peter's mom, Joyce, played by Jane Curtin, whoop whoop, who, favorite Third Rock from the Sun alum, as well as SNL.
I know, I was going to say, I liked her back in SNL.
His dad, Oswald, played by, who's he played by, Tamara? I can't remember.
J.K. Simmons. Burr, burr, burr. The guy you either love to hate or want to be your dad. There's no middle ground. Those are the only two options.
He's got a big warm hug of a voice, gosh darn it. And his younger brother, Robbie, played by Andy Samberg. If Peter ever had a best friend growing up. Wait, no. If Peter ever had a best friend growing up.
Because they were asking him a question. The question gets posed.
Oh, the question gets posed. Sorry, we got distracted by all the introductions. Okay. Question gets posed to Peter's mom, Joyce, if Peter ever had a best friend growing up. And the sentence was totally grammatically correct, by the way. This was my bad.
We just got too starstruck.
His parents and brother contemplates this and both admit that Peter always had girlfriends, but never guy friends. Or he'd be so wrapped up in his relationships that his friends fell by the wayside. Peter tries to explain this away by saying his dad worked for IBM, so they moved all the time. I don't know why him working for IBM would make them move all the time, but whatever.
Yeah.
Oswald, daddy-o, counters, Robbie never had any problem making friends, but he probably wanted to suck all their dicks. Joyce gasps, but Robbie assures her, no, it's true. Well, Dad adds, what? My son is a gay man and I fully embrace his lifestyle. Not to be confused with the lifestyle, which is swinging. No. Joyce knows, but language at the dinner table. Robbie also nods knowingly and tells his brother, Dad loves the gays so much that I made him an honorary one. Robbie and Dad share a fist bump while Peter asks his father, well, who is your best friend? He's trying to redeem himself because he's sure his dad doesn't have a bestie, but Dad surprises him by saying, Hank Mardukas has been my best friend ever since my first year at IBM. I talk to him 2 to 3 times a week for the last 30 years. That's better than us. And and Robbie, Peter balks. You mean to tell me Robbie's your best friend? Dad says flatly, correct, and Hank Mardukas. Dad and Robbie cheers their beer bottles while Peter looks on in disbelief at the favoritism and begins to question his life choices as his pain-in-the-ass younger brother is besties with their dad, who has 2 best friends, and Peter, well, he has none. Womp, 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 womp.
In his defense, there's quite a few pictures with him and his mom, Joyce. So maybe his mom's his best friend?
I think that's true. And mm-hmm. I did date a person whose mom was kind of like their best friend. So, yeah.
I would love it if my mom was my best friend. As long as the mom's not like controlling or like competitive with you, then I wouldn't see a problem with a guy having a best friend that's his mom. Although I've never dated one, so I might not know what I'm asking for. Anyways. The next short montage of location shots I like to call a walk in Tam's old stomping grounds because they're in Hollywood. There's the freeway a few exits from my old house, Sunset Boulevard a few blocks away from the farmer's market I always went to, and the street that I had to steer my ex-brother-in-law down when we thought we could walk a very long distance drunk and were wrong.
Fun times.
It was exciting watching all that. Yeah. It was like, oh my God, that's her. My brother-in-law almost ran out into the street whooping because he was too drunk to know better.
Oof.
Peter drives through it all in his car, but now his eyes have been opened. Everywhere he turns, there's bros and buddies and guy pals all around him.
I like how you went into the friendship thesaurus for that. Bros, buddies, and guy pals. Like, excellent.
Yep. Painting a picture. That's what I'm doing. Painting a picture with words. There's a happy pair of guys jogging together, a group of construction workers on their lunch break sharing a laugh. At a traffic stop, he stopped next to a car full of guys having a spirited conversation, which stops almost immediately when Peter gives them an awkward salute. He finally makes it to his office building and starts regaling his coworkers with the details of his proposal. The women in the office eat it up, but when he tries to share the news with this male work frenemy, Tevin cuts Peter off mid-story, tries to weasel his way into Peter's high-end real estate listing. Peter tells him, no thank you, very politely, and against Peter's emphatic protests, sends him an explicit video of an elderly woman on a Sibian machine. Corinne, would you like to explain to the gentle listeners what a Sibian machine is?
I was going to look it up, but fortunately the movie described it to me, which is some kind of like sex saddle that you can sit on and it will vibrate for you.
It's supposed to give you really intense orgasms.
Yes, that's what I meant. It gives you intense orgasms by vibrating for you. Yes.
When you say vibrating, you just make it sound like it's one of those little ponies that go back and forth in front of the grocery stores that we used to ride when they were kids.
Oh my God, I love those so much.
But these are saddles of a different kind. Much, much different.
Yes. Oh, and they have a dildo on them too.
I was going to say.
So you can ride it like a, yeah, ride it like a pony being fucked by a... Most of these images are blurred out by Google.
Blurred out? Oh yeah, no, I know. Because I did that same image search that you're doing. I was like, I'm not going to click on any of those. I've seen enough in the ones that aren't blurred out. Thank you very much. Peter finally makes it to his cubicle where his phone rings. It's Zoe, and she apologetically tells him she forgot that she's hosting ladies' night at their place. Peter tells her no problem. He's got fencing practice after work and will break the engagement news to Gilliam and the boys over some beers. We cut to later, where Peter is absolutely owning his friend Gil on the fencing mat. After winning the bout, Peter tells him, good job, man! And Gil tells him, fuck off! Which makes it a little awkward later when Peter tries asking him and the other two guys in the locker room named Eugene and Larry if they'd like to go out for drinks. By then, Gilliam's cooled off and apologized, but none of the guys can actually go because they're all going on a weekend camping trip slash engagement party for Eugene and Joshua Tree. Eugene is played by Aziz Ansari.
Yeah.
Peter's face falls and they apologize for not inviting him. He just never seemed interested when they all went out all those times after fencing practice. But Peter, not bothered by it, and he divulges that he just got engaged too, and the guys enthusiastically congratulate him, sit in a long awkward silence, and then part ways. Peter calls after them, hey, play a YouTube album, because Joshua Tree, get it? And then heads home alone, alone, alone.
Alone, alone, alone. Yeah, so fucking Tedwin or Terwin or Tuolumne.
Tevin,
thank you.
Tevin.
It's no wonder he's not friends with Tevin. Tevin,
yes,
is an asshole. And hi, who sends non-consensually work inappropriate things to a person on their work email during work hours so it plays on their computer? Yeah. No.
Yeah.
At work?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Peter even says, he goes, I didn't even press the button. It just started playing loudly, like, yes, automatically in his monitor. I'm like, well, fuck right off, Tevin. You
seriously,
fuck right off with that.
That's one long sit down with HR.
I think I would have to return the favor, but my video would be like, so are you wondering how to get rid of that crusty discharge on the head of your penis? Like, top volume.
I was thinking erectile dysfunction, but yes, I think.
Yes. Great minds. Great minds.
Yes, we're on the same page. And then, yeah, Gilliam, you know, there's no vibe there. I started watching this movie, which I don't know if I've seen it before. I don't think I had. But Peter needs some gay best friends is what Peter needs. Some gay men
right,
best friends. And yeah. These guys are not his, they're not his people. Like, they're just not his people.
Yeah. It's so hard to find, like, good friends that you actually click with. The other day, David, my old roommate, like, called me when he was on his way home just to chit-chat. And I was so pleasantly surprised because we talked for, like, 45 minutes. And we used to bitch about work and, like, gossip and stuff. But now that we both neither work in the same place and can still talk for, like, 45 minutes straight, was really cool. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
It's that or I'm just fucking interesting as hell and can talk
you
to
are,
anybody.
Which is why we have a podcast. I'm not saying that you carry me on your coattails, but you know, it has been implied. I'll just say that. So When Peter gets home, he peeks into the living room where Zoe is hanging out with her seven closest friends. Seven closest friends. I'm like, oh, fuck off with that. That's too many.
I was like, sorority. That's the only thing I could think is sorority.
They're having such a raucous good times, they don't even notice Peter's arrival. So he decides to surprise everyone by making root beer floats. Is that the sweetest thing ever?
Yes. I know.
He makes them, and just as he's pushing through the kitchen door with his treats, he hears one of Zoe's friends ask if Peter is a freakazoid because he has no friends. He quickly goes beep, beep, beep back, but leaves the door open a crack so he can listen. And Zoe argues he's not. When another friend adds, won't it look weird going down the aisle with six bridesmaids and a maid of honor? Who's he going to have as his best man? Zoe shakes her head, saying, I have no idea. I think his best friend is his mom. Ding, 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 ding.
Camera
ding,
for
ding.
The win. Yes. Hence all those pictures of them leaping into the air in front of real estate listings.
The whole room practically cringes at her statement. Just as Zoe notices Peter listening at the kitchen door, he ducks back, contemplates making a run for it. But when Zoe calls his name again, he comes in cheerily announcing, I made you all root beer floats. The ladies nervously greet him, and one of Zoe's friends asks, Peter, are these chocolate straws? He nods awkwardly, murmuring, yeah, they're pirouettes.
I just had to leave that in because that is such a sweet fucking, like, mwah, chef's kiss.
I know.
A sweet detail. Such a sweet detail.
Seriously, Peter, you can come over to my house and make me a root beer float with a pirouette in it. Yes. A pirouette is like a chocolate wafer that looks like a little cigar, but it's hollow through the center. So it can be used as a straw. Yeah.
Yeah. And deliciously eaten afterwards. Mm-hmm. Is it pertinent to the story? Absolutely not. Did I include it because I liked it? Yes, I did.
It is pertinent because if he was going on trial, this would be proof of what a mensch he is. What a good guy. Oh.
Indeed.
Yes. The ladies congratulate him on the engagement, and he pumps his fist in mock triumph and says, thanks, I feel so grown up, and then excuses himself back to the kitchen. Over his shoulder, he hears another friend hiss, do you think he heard us? He did. And once he's alone, he says emphatically, I gotta get some fucking friends. The next day, Peter decides to solicit the help of his little brother. He goes to the gym where Robbie works, and his brother is thrilled to help. And I'm just gonna put this out here. Okay, no, I have seen this movie before.
Okay.
I saw it once, and I was like, ah, okay. But what I remember about this movie, the singular thing I remember about this movie from when I saw it in the theaters, mm-hmm. was Andy Samberg playing Robbie and how he was the most no homo in playing a gay person that I have ever seen. Like, yes. Andy Samberg, who actually is not like a bro-y kind of guy. He's like, I'm a bro, yo. I'm gay. No homo. I mean, it was... His vibe, I did not expect him to be swishy in the least or anything like that because, hi, gay people, range of behaviors and whatnot, personalities from butch to not butch. But the way he played it, it was just like, for me, it was like, I'm going to play a gay guy, but there's going to be no confusion. I'm not gay. Like, that was the vibe I was feeling off of it.
Yeah.
It was, it was odd. Anyways. Don't think that this was quite the right role for Andy Samberg, who I love in other things, just not this one.
And I think he was playing the masculine brosif guy because of this next scene that you're going to describe to us.
Sweet. So Robbie works at the gym, and he is well-versed in hooking up and proves it by flirting with a straight man who is so taken with Robbie's masculine, beguiling wiles. He flirts right back.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. That guy had a wedding ring on, and I was like, ooh.
See, it's like that guy where, you know, you see what they used to say, like Billy D. Williams or freaking like they'd see a really handsome, well put together guy and straight guys would be like, God, that guy is so fucking cool. I think that's what Robbie's going for in his character choices, that I'm so fucking like the downest guy that everybody just quivers as when I enter the room or the gym or whatever.
Right. But he's not that guy. Like he'll... Yeah, he's just not that guy.
I think he's trying to play that guy. Maybe that's like just the whole masculine wiles, like I said, like gets the guys to be like, oh, I'm having some feelings I haven't felt before.
Yes, I see that. I see where you're going with that. I feel that energy, just not from him. But I think that I think you're right. I think you're right, on the nose. Yeah.
Character choice that he made, and maybe it's not working.
No. Robbie admits that finding platonic friends is much harder than finding booty.
I didn't write that.
Well, it's true. That's what he admitted.
Robbie is it a lie, though? No, it's not.
I know. As a woman, finding booty is much easier than finding platonic friends. It's true.
Fair.
Yeah. Robbie offers to do some recon around the gym, but also advises his brother, be aggressive, use the computer, have mom set you up, go on some man dates. If you see a guy you like, strike up a conversation and ask him out after work for drinks or a casual lunch. No dinner and no movies. You're not trying to take these boys to see The Devil Wears Prada. Peter's eyes roll into the back of his head and he admits, oh, I love that movie. Yes, yes, yes. There was a guy that I matched with on a dating app and he was like, and I love rom-coms. And he started talking about rom-coms with me and I was all excited. And then he disappeared. And I was like, damn it. Ugh. His brother looks at him sternly about his passion for the rom-coms. And Peter sheepishly agrees he will not do rom-coms or dinner. No dinner.
Then we get a montage of Peter's friend quest. First, he procures an invite from Denise, one of Zoe's BFFs, to her husband Barry's long-standing poker night. Barry, played by Jon Favreau, is kind of a dick. Almost equal to the Jon Favreau Four Christmases dick level, but not quite.
I don't know. I kind of liked the Jon Favreau Four Christmases character for the most part.
More than this guy? You prefer that dick to this dick? This Jon Favreau dick is preferable to the...
Yeah.
I love you, man, Jon Favreau dick.
Yeah, because I might like blindfold myself and pretend that that dick is not a conservative and hump him as opposed to the other one, because he has his charm. He had his charming moments.
Yeah.
How he was with the kids and when he played Taboo with his wife, it was just perfection. Yes.
But this one wasn't physically abusive, so I guess that notched him down a little bit more. This, I love you, man, Jon Favreau didn't strike anybody or pin them or body slam them.
Yeah. But, you know, siblings do that whole wrestling thing with each other. When Tamara says physically abusive, in Four Christmases, he was not beating his wife. He was wrestling his brother.
And gentle listeners, if you haven't, go back and listen to our Four Christmases episode that we did last December. Bing! Barry is less enthusiastic about the newcomer, and him and Denise whisper argue in the kitchen after Peter arrives because Peter admitted that he doesn't play a lot of poker, which infuriates Barry, who wants a serious game. But Denise tells him to suck it up, do Zoe a favor, and she'll keep the lights on when they have sex later that night.
Oh.
Which gets him to agree. Peter tries to assimilate to the very bro-y gathering, but isn't successful. As the group huddles around their cards during a round, Peter suggests, okay, on the count of three, say whether you prefer Beatles or Stones. Ready? 1, 2, 3. The other players grumble and tell him, fuck off.
Oof.
Peter does. He hunkers down quietly and doesn't win any more favor when he wins a large pot of money later in an accidental royal flush against Barry.
Yes.
And straight gets asked to leave after playing boat race, a drinking game which Peter also wins. The beer pounding causes him to projectile vomit all over his host Barry's face.
Yay Never a vomit was more strategically placed. That's beautiful. Next, brother Robbie finds a guy at his gym who's interested in hanging out with Peter. He's a small, statured man with a very squeaky voice, played by... How do you pronounce his name, Tamara?
Joe Lo Truglio.
Yes, Joe Lo Truglio. And please, Tamara, tell me your fond memories of Joe Lo Truglio.
My fond memories.
You mentioned the actor's name like Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes. He was in something. Gosh.
He was in something.
Leo, I was on a naming everybody kick. He was in Superbad. He was in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He was in Reno 911.
He's very recognizable.
Yeah.
So picture this guy. And not the Peter in this movie, but the Peter in the Brady Bunch during his "When the Seasons Change, You've Got to Rearrange" recording session. That's kind of like his voice, Joe Truglio.
That's the squeaky voice we're trying to describe. Yes. Here.
Barry tells the squeaky patron that he'll give him 5 free sessions to take his brother out. Damn, 5 free sessions. That's some cheddar. Shit. He agrees because next we see him and Peter at La Galaxy soccer game.
L.A. It's L.A. Galaxy.
It's not La Galaxy because
no, I'm sorry I didn't put the periods in there. It's a Los Angeles Galaxy soccer team.
Okay. Fine. Squeaky guy is enthusiastic fan, and while the stadium is dead quiet, he tries to get a section to start chanting, "Here we go, Galaxy, here we go!" He tries to get Peter to join in, but Peter is embarrassed by his platonic companion. Eventually, Guy Date's enthusiasm, coupled with the shrillness of his squeaks, rubs the surrounding fans the wrong way. Shocker! A guy 2 rows behind him finally yells, "Sit down and shut up," which enrages Squeaky as he tries to lunge over the heads of the fans behind them to get to the guy. And Tamara wrote, steroids might also be in his workout routine. And I have a different hypothesis. It starts with white lines running through my mind. Cocaine.
You're trying to say this guy is doing cocaine, not steroids?
One speedy motherfucker.
Okay.
He's very manic energy.
I can get behind
that. Peter tries meeting guys online. There's a site called friendfinder.com. He sees a profile pic of a guy named Mel, about 36, with the same interests. So promising. Peter sets up a casual lunch, but when he arrives at the diner, he's a little miffed that his potential friend has kittenfished. What does kittenfished? I know the term catfished.
When you're not exactly entirely honest about who you are, like when you're posting the pictures from 20 years ago or 20 pounds ago or 20 like lost hairs ago. So when you're posting those pictures that aren't exactly reflective of who you are in this point in time.
So he posted pictures of when he was a kitten instead of a cat. I got you.
Yes.
Yeah.
His pictures were 36 and
he's very nice, but actually 89 years old.
89 years old.
Yes.
The man was 89 years old. And Peter even asked him, he's like, "Have you been using the internet long?" "Yeah, about 4 years." So he knew exactly what he was doing. Next mandate in line comes from Peter's mom, Joyce, who tells him over the phone that her friend's son just moved into town and she set up a dinner with him. Peter's reluctant and tells her, "Robbie said not to go with guys to dinner." And mom pish-poshes this, arguing, "Oh, your brother's crazy. And this guy's so excited to meet you." So Peter reluctantly agrees. He meets his last guy date, Doug, outside a steakhouse. Doug is smoking a cigarette, but quickly stubs it out and seems perfectly normal. They have a good dinner and talk easily with each other, even after Peter does some horrible impressions of old SNL characters, like the church lady.
Peter is terrible at impressions.
Isn't that special? Isn't that special? Yeah, Peter's terrible at a lot of things, impressions being one of them.
Yes.
His potential new friend, Doug, ogles a cute waitress, and him and Pete mime back and forth about how hot she is, which makes the end of the date a big surprise to Peter because as he's saying goodbye to Doug, they agree to hang out again. And as Peter goes in for a handshake, Doug goes in for a kiss.
Passionate kiss.
Peter doesn't pull away, but he also doesn't reciprocate. He just stands there paralyzed until his now must be considered a full-on date, Doug, stops kissing him and leaves. I would say the dry kiss rating on this lip lock between Peter and Doug. Corinne, what would you say it is?
I actually think it's one of the hottest kisses in the movie. So you give that a four dry kisser.
I was going to say a 5, because even though Peter wasn't trying hard, like Doug was really going in for it. Like he was going for the win. But then I remembered that Doug smoked, and then I'm like, okay, well, you have to kiss a smoky mouth. That's got to knock it down. So I also gave it a 4.
Yeah. After his Doug date, Peter goes home to Zoe. They are kissing on the bed. We're thinking, what kind of movie are we watching? Is this a porno? Zoe murmurs.
They have all their clothes on. There's no Sibian saddles or anything. It's not a porn. It's far from it.
I've hardly seen you these past couple of weeks. They continue kissing and are about to get it on when Zoe suddenly pulls away and asks, have you been kissing someone? Peter's confused. What? No. Zoe argues, Peter, your mouth tastes like an ashtray. Peter finally comes clean and says, okay, my mom set up this date, but he mistakenly thought I was gay and kissed me at the end of the night. Zoe looks appalled until he explains, look, I overheard you and your friends talking, and I've been trying to make friends before the wedding. Zoe's face softens. Oh, now I understand why you wanted to play poker with Barry. Because, see, she knows that Barry's an asshole.
Yeah.
She just doesn't say it to her friend because she's a good friend. Peter nods, yeah. That guy's a dick. I puked all over him, like projectile vomited. I say, good job, Peter. And Zoe nods back. She knows about the vomiting and asks, do you mind brushing your teeth? He agrees and pads into the bathroom, explaining, I have 3 times already. Zoe suggests, there's some Tom's mouthwash on the top shelf. But Peter ups the ante. Yeah, I think I have to break out the serious chemicals, and heads for the mostly unused bottle of Listerine everyone pretty much keeps under their sink. Because who wants to use Listerine except in case of emergency? Listerine is foul.
I have the purple kind. The purple Listerine's under my sink.
Purple Listerine probably nowhere near as bad as the yellow OG.
Oh, Listerine. God, no. The yellow is... Mm-mm.
Yeah, I'm talking
the
about...
The purple's like... No alcohol. There's no alcohol in it.
Yeah, I'm talking about the yellow OG Listerine here. Yeah.
Yeah. Why is that even still sold? Like, honestly, who sees all the bevy of beautiful colored mouthwashes and be like, that one right there, that yellowish orange piss flavored, if you haven't had a glass of water in 3 days, that's what I want to put in my mouth.
Yeah, because it looks piss colored. It's special.
So special. A couple of weeks later, Peter is having his open house for Lou Ferrigno's property.
Yay!
He is dusting a painted portrait of Lou, aka the Incredible Hulk, lighting the crystal fireplace, and putting out sandwiches. Quite a few people are in attendance when Peter notices an interesting-looking gentleman wearing checkered Vans, jeans, a brown tweed jacket over a pink and white striped sweater vest, and that's over an untucked orange plaid button-up. It's a whole look. He's eating one of the complimentary sandwiches, and Peter makes his way over and thanks him for breaking the snack seal. And the tweed guy laughs and says, I never understood why people are so reluctant to eat at these things. So why is Ferrigno selling the place?
The Hulk.
Peter divulges that Ferrigno, aka the Incredible Hulk, got a place in Jackson Hole because he was tired of the Hollywood grind. Mr. Pink Sweater Vest laughs and remarks, you know, I've always been looking for a place with a life-size statue of Lou Ferrigno, aka the Incredible Hulk, so I think I found it. He motions to the backyard, where a larger-than-life bronze statue of the actor stands flexing his muscles. Peter chuckles, and they have an easy back-and-forth banter about a douchey guy who's pretending to be interested in buying the house to impress a girl he brought along. And then Senior Blazer Vance gives Peter a play-by-play of the same guy trying to nonchalantly crop dust farts all over his open house. Peter's impressed with the stranger's accurate perceptions on bodily functions and his entertaining banter. The stranger admits, hey, full disclosure, I'm not interested in buying this place. I just come because at the classy open houses, there's generally a good spread and a bevy of beautiful, newly single divorcees. Peter's taken aback, but tells him, I don't know what to say. Thank you for your honesty. The guy, who must be on the last day of his clean clothes because that outfit looks like it's cobbled together from the bottom of his closet, holds up the sandwich and says, hey, thank you for the sun-dried tomato aioli, because it's a revelation. Peter's astounded that he recognized the love and care he put into his snacky spread and thanks him for noticing. The stranger goes to leave. There's another open house he wants to hit in Bel Air that should be resplendent with cougars. He takes a sandwich to go, but not before they exchange business cards, and we find out that the guy is named Sidney Fife.
And he's a private investor, which you're like, okay, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah. And his email address is thefifeman@blankety-blankcompany.com.
Peter really, really liked Sidney in a purely platonic way and wants to call him, but he's nervous. Sidney could be Peter's ideal BFF. He appreciated the fucking tomato aioli. Come on. I mean,
come on.
Sun-dried tomato aioli. Excuse moi.
The man knows a good sandwich.
Yes. And Tamara appreciates that as well.
They do.
All the other men he's gone out with pale in comparison. He finally builds up the courage a few days later at work and leaves an epic voicemail.
Is it though?
Hey, Peter, it's Sidney Klavan. No, that's not correct. Sidney, it's Peter Klavan. We met at the open house last week. I had a showing. And if you ever wanted to get together and talk about real estate, that's not what I'm sorry. I forgot what I was going to say. The open house and we met, no pressure. Just call back when you get a moment. Hope you have a great day. Bye now. Cool. Totally, like, awesomest message ever.
No.
What? No. What?
I'm going to veto that statement right there.
Later that afternoon, he winds up at Zoe's work between meetings after he's face-palmed himself to death over the message that he left, because sometimes messages are forever.
Messages are definitely. Voicemails are forever. You can't take that shit back.
Zoe works at a small, chic retail store. I think they do home decor and dabble in interior design? ?
Thank you, because I'm like, they do have like some swatches and some home goods, yeah, like in their quote unquote retail store, but they also have like a full on office desk that they're all just huddled around, like eating their lunch as people walk back and forth in their area. And I'm like, that's very unprofessional. You know what? Whatever. It's your store. You do you.
Yeah, I know. There's so many pillows. And there's people shopping in the store. I think they're looking at different pieces of furniture. And I think there's a little bit of interior design overlap. It's called ZHD, which 100% stands for Zoe, Haley, and Denise. I would not have caught that, but Tamara did. I did catch the news article feature of them behind them while they were eating that had the three of their faces together that said ZHD over the top of it. So,
I did not. Well,
that is why I say it was 100% stands for Zoe, Haley, and Denise, because bing, bing, bing. Because I was looking for signs about what all was going on in that store as well once you brought it up. Yes.
I was like, zebra print, home goods, and decor? No. Yeah, I was reaching. I was trying to figure it out. And then I'm like, I bet it's their names.
Yep, it's their names. Haley asks, so, Peter, how's your little manhunt going? He groans at Zoe. Great, so you told them. Fortunately, his phone rings, rescuing him from the conversation. He answers it and excitedly excuses himself. Zoe and her friends quickly deduce that he's attempting to set up a mandate. That's man space date, not mandate. Zoe and Denise try to listen in while Haley complains Peter got a boyfriend before she did. Gee, I wonder why, Haley, with your dating technique, it's a wonder that you haven't been snapped up. Peter tells his phone, yeah, I can be in Venice by 5 p.m. See you in a jiff. Zoe looks at him questioningly and says, see you in a jiff? He drops his hand and says, see you in a jiff? I've never said that in my entire life. He fills in his fiance about meeting Sidney, liking Sidney, and now ultimately hanging out with Sidney.
Next, we cut to Peter walking into a restaurant called James Beach. Peter's on the phone with his brother, And Barry's giving him a pep talk and reminding him, no more dinners. You don't want to get another tongue fucking at the valet stand. Peter assures him he won't. And the place is bustling. Peter and Sydney get seated at a small table, and over beers they get to know each other. Peter tells his mandate that he met Zoe the day after he broke up with his last girlfriend, and Sydney marvels that there was no lash between the vag, aka lag time between your vaginas, and asks how Peter's sex life is with Zoe. Peter balks because they hardly know each other to share such personal details, but Sydney encourages him to lighten up and share. He does, and finally divulges that his sex life with Zoe is good. Sydney knows he's lying because his voice goes up at the end, and Peter finally admits that he just wishes that Zoe would like giving blowjobs more, then chastises himself for even saying that. The pair are interrupted by a couple asking if they're going to be using the table much longer, and Sydney waves them off because they're staying for dinner. Peter gets a panicked look on his face and tries to decline, but Sid will not have it, telling him this place has the best fish tacos ranked. They're literally one of the best places in the nation. You can't argue with that taco logic. So Peter stays, and we get a montage of them having a spirited conversation about hybrid cars versus hybrid animals, trading facts and doing impressions of the ex-pro wrestler Andre the Giant,
anybody want a peanut,
and many other manly things. After several rounds of drinks and fish tacos, they close down the place, and outside, while saying goodbye, Peter apologizes because they never wound up talking about real estate. But Sydney shrugs, saying, yeah, I don't care. You just seem like a cool dude, so I thought I'd see if you want to go grab a beer, that's all. Peter tells him, I'm glad you did, Jobin. Sydney's confused, because what the fuck's a Jobin? And Peter apologizes. He tried giving Sydney a nickname because while they were eating, Sydney called him Pistol, as in Pistol Pete, and Peter returned the favor by calling him Jobin.
Because Sydney and Jobin just like go together, just like Pistol Pete.
You don't see that? You don't see the association, Sydney Jobin?
No.
Is it not clear to you?
No, it really, really isn't. I don't even know where that came from. I do know a guy whose last name is Jobin, and it's J-O-B-I-N, but no.
Well, you're not the only one, because Peter just made up a random word, tried to paste it onto Sydney. Peter apologizes again. Sorry, Jobin's not a word. I'm drunk. I'm just going to take a cab home. And Sydney's amused by Peter's awkwardness and tells him, keep my number and call me if you need me, yeah?
Aww.
And this could be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
And Sydney hops on the world's oldest looking Vespa and rides, and not in like a classic, oh, that's hot kind of Vespa, like an old junky kind of looking Vespa, and rides off into the night.
Yes. Which is not awkward at all, because he's like 6'4". So he looks unnaturally large on the thing.
A few days later, Peter's at work. Oh, and don't worry, gentle listeners. Peter drunkenly figures out how to call a cab. He doesn't drive.
Yes. He gets home safe. Yeah. Safe and sound.
A few days later, Peter's at work getting hounded by his coworker / frenemy, Tevin. Tevin Frosted Tips. Frosted Tips Tevin. Who's trying to put on his friend hat and convince Peter that he doesn't have the clout to sell the Ferrigno, aka the Hulk, house. Tevin explains, I've got bus benches and even better, urinal cakes. They're in every P.F. Chang's and other chain restaurant in Los Angeles. They've got my face on them and men pee on them all the time. And you know how many times I've walked down the street and people stop me and say, I know you from somewhere. Yes, yes you do. You pissed on my face, friend. Now, let me wet my beak on this listing.
I don't know if I necessarily trust a guy whose face I pissed on. Just saying.
Yeah, he's talking about it as it's a subliminal thing. But I am like, oh, you're the stinky toilet deodorizer guy. No, thank you.
Yeah.
I would see him, and then I would automatically get that scent memory of the toilet donut in my mouth, like it does when you go into the bathroom and it just sticks in there when you leave and you're like, eh. Yeah. No.
1,000%. I would see Tevin across the street and think he was stinky.
Yes.
Just by sight.
Yes. From association. Absolutely. Peter declines again, and after Tevin leaves, he notices Sydney's business card tacked to his bulletin board and gives him a call. Peter refers to himself as Pistol when Sydney answers, but it doesn't ring a bell until he clarifies it's Peter Klavan from the James Beach thing. From the James Beach thing the other night. Just want to see if you want to have lunch sometime. Sydney remembers him and invites Peter to join him in an hour at Muscle Beach to take his dog for a walk. Peter, in an attempt to sound casual, responds, "Great, I'll see you there," or "I'll see you another time." Sydney points out, "That's really confusing. I'm not sure if you're saying you'll show up or not." Peter assures him he'll be there and signs off with, "Latris on the menjay."
Latris on the menjay.
Latris on the menjay. Thank you for that. And then kicks himself for the ridiculously stupid made-up word that seemed to shoot out of his mouth every time he talks to this guy. Menjay particularly. It sounds kind of like Menzies. I don't know.
I still say that when I get off the phone. If I'm talking to somebody, I'll be like, "Latris on the menjay." Oh, I feel you, Peter. I feel you so hard.
Next, we see the pair walking down Venice Beach. Sydney introduces Peter to his puggle, cross between a beagle and a pug, that's named Anwar Sadat because he's a dead ringer for the former president of Egypt. I looked up the picture, didn't see the association, but you know, hey. Peter shares the conversation he had with his coworker, Tevin, and Sydney asks, he wants to share the listing? Wouldn't that split the commission? What about the property you wanted to buy? Oh, see, Sydney listens to him. Mm-hmm. Good man.
I know.
Peter admits that would put a damper on his plans, and Sydney tells him that his open house was classy and understated, and out of all of them he's gone to, no one has ever put out rosemary bread paninis. Ooh, rosemary bread. Yes, please.
With a tomato, sun-dried tomato aioli. Oh. That just sounds like heaven on a fucking piece of carb. Panini.
Yeah. Heaven on a nini. It absolutely sounds like heaven on a nini to me, too. Sydney's dog stops to take a shit in the middle of the busy sidewalk, and Sydney just walks away.
So Peter asks me.
I know. I'm like, oh, motherfucker. As somebody who has walked dogs and picked up many a poo, I'm like, holy y'all. And Peter calls him on him. He says, "Are you going to pick that up?" Sydney pshaws. It's good for the environment. It's like compost. Sure. Compost that sticks to your shoe and makes a big stinky mess everywhere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just then, a man who is jogging steps in Anwar's shit and yells at Sydney, "Why don't you pick up after your fucking dog?" Sydney turns around, jogs up to him, spreads his arms and yells, "Mind your fuckhole!" The man backs off scared, and Peter looks as if he's contemplating running too. But Sydney just returns to his normal chill self and explains that men are full of testosterone and they need to let loose every once in a while.
Peter looks unconvinced, so Sydney tells him, "Scream! Go ahead!" Peter can't because there's people all over the place, and that would be embarrassing. So Sydney leads him down under the pier, and I myself would be a little more reluctant to go to a second location to a guy who just went apeshit on a jogger, but that's just me.
Same.
In the shadow of the boardwalk, Sydney convinces Peter to unleash his inner fury by screaming at the top of his lungs. After a few failed attempts, he does it, and does it well, and finds it surprisingly liberating.
Yay!
Sydney's impressed with Peter's willingness to express his primal nature and invites him over to his house for some sweet, sweet hang time.
Oh, and also, after he screams, he says, "Now, do you want to go and get corn dogs?" And Peter says, "Yes." That's very important. Important. Corn dogs are very important.
Very important corn dogs. He also said, "You scared my dog." That scream was so good. You scared my dog. They go to Sydney's very small bungalow in Venice, but they don't go inside. Sydney leads Peter to the back where he's converted his detached garage into a man cave.
Oof.
There's a full Rock Band's worth of musical equipment, tons of photos on the wall, a dilapidated couch, and a worn armchair next to a bong, condoms, and a Costco-sized bottle of lotion.
Don't sit in the armchair. Don't sit in the armchair.
Don't sit in the armchair. It's going to be sticky. I guarantee it's going to be sticky. Peter eyes the ladder items and asks, hey, what's going on over there? And Sydney admits, oh, yes, this is my jerk-off station. I use the condoms because they desensitize me, and it also makes for less mess. Peter seems appalled, and Sydney argues, I always get this response, but it's a perfectly natural part of life, so why hide it? He asks Peter, when's the last time you jerked off? And Peter hesitates, and then reluctantly tells his new friend that it was the other day when Zoe went to the flea market with her friends, and I jerked off to a picture of her in her bikini.
That is so sweet. That is the sweetest thing.
Not to Sydney. Sydney thinks it's disgusting because no man should be whacking off to a picture of their own spouse when they're spanking the salami. You got to have different flavor tail, I guess.
Like, I don't mind the different flavor tail. I just think it's really sweet that he chose not different flavored tail.
They've only been together 8 months, though. He's still in the sweet spot.
Yeah, true.
They have some more brosive conversations, which make it more and more evident that they are quite different. Peter doesn't keep secrets from Zoe, and Sydney thinks secrets are necessary in a relationship. Peter played 18 holes of golf with Zoe, and they had a lot of fun. Sydney thinks golfing with the date sounds like his worst nightmare. But they both bond over a Rush poster, and both are fans. Sydney says, Rush is the best band ever! And Peter says, yeah, about the greatest band ever! Because it's just awkward. Sydney asks if Peter plays an instrument. Peter tells him, yeah, I slapped some bass in a high school jazz band. And Sydney proposes that they should jam together. Peter's on board. But after a few uncomfortable quiet moments, he decides to leave. He goes to do a bro shake with Sydney, but ruins it when he pulls in for a hug. Sydney doesn't reciprocate the embrace, so he awkwardly pats his shoulder instead. This poor guy. Peter says goodbye, then calls his new friend City Slicker. City Slicker. As another attempt at a nickname, yeah. And Sydney gives him a quizzical look, and he immediately apologizes again. And Sydney tells him it's okay. It's better than Jobin.
True, but also no. Then, no to the City Slicker nickname.
And then he practically pushes Peter out of the garage as he assures him, I'll come up with something. I'll get you. I'll get you good. A nickname. A good one. He is Pistol after all, so hopefully he's a man of his word.
The next day, Peter's in his office cubicle when Lou Ferrigno calls the Hulk. Hulk smash!
Lou Ferrigno calls the Hulk? He's talking to
AKA the Hulk calls. Everyone is a little starstruck and the office quiets as everyone tries to listen in on the conversation, especially Tevin. Oh, Tevin, don't be a Tevin. What is being a Tevin? For example, when somebody suggests you put your face on a urinal cake, just say no. Don't be a Tevin.
If you get some very frosty tips in 2009, you might be a Tevin.
No, don't be a Tevin. Just say no.
Wait, what else does he do?
If you're trying to snake somebody's client away from them, just say no. Don't be a Tevin.
If you're sending people unsolicited videos of elderly women on Sibian machines, that's a fucking Tevin move. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do it. Just then. Sydney shows up at Peter's work for a change and overhears that he's talking to Lou. Mr. Ferrigno is not happy, a.k.a. the Hulk, about the progress Peter is making and chews him out for not receiving any offers on his house in the 3 weeks the property has been on the market. As Peter tries to placate him, Sydney whispers. And this, I have a fondness for this because I would do this to my sister all the time. Yeah. While she'd be like talking to someone, I would whisper into her ear, like in real life, because men would fixate on her. And so she would have these guys come up to her and just be so focused on her. I did not exist at all. And so so I could say all kinds of stuff to her into her ear while they're talking to her. And they would not bat an eye. They would just keep on talking to her. Oh.
They were mesmerized by her tatas.
They were mesmerized by her tatas. Meanwhile, I'd be like, secret lovers.
That's what we are.
I'll make love to you. does a similar thing, and he whispers, "Don't make him mad. You wouldn't like it if he's mad." Peter snickers at this and tries to maintain his composure as Sidney mimes ripping off his shirt and flying into a rage as the Incredible Hulk used to do. Once he's off the phone, Sidney asks if Peter's okay. And Peter assures him that he is, but asks, "What are you doing here?" Sidney explains that his blood bank is nearby and he has a rare type, so he donates pretty often. Peter is impressed by his altruism until Sidney adds, "And there's this nurse there that I want to fuck so bad." Peter nods. "Okay, now that tracks."
Mm-hmm.
"Hey, weren't you supposed to go hiking with your friends today?" And Sidney admits a few of them had to cancel, so he has a house full of kookaroo and thought he'd invite Peter over for a jam session and to eat. And FYI, kookaroo is a chicken chain in SoCal that went out of business in 2014.
Ah.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure it out. I'm like, is that a bird or a chicken? Or maybe a little bit of both. I don't know.
It's a chicken bird because a chicken will go kookaroo. See? Onomatopoeia, babe. Anywho. Peter, in an attempt to joke, stammers out, "A house full of kookaroo. That sounds like about as appetizing as a big old plate of dirt." Sidney shakes his head because now he's familiar with his new friend's awkwardness and half-jokingly tells him, "I still want to hang out despite that joke because it was a bad joke. There was nothing funny about the joke."
No.
And you know that kookaroo was good once we found out that it was actually chicken that he was talking about. Peter agrees the joke was bad, and Sidney assures him, "You're better than that." Then we get a montage of the two spending a lot of time together. They're jamming to Rush songs, riding tandem on Sidney's scooter, walking Anwar, and when another very large, unsuspecting pedestrian steps in the dog's shit, they flee together. So much for that testosterone. Sidney even poses as a potential buyer at Peter's open house to try and drum up more interest, and they call each other over. This is also something my sister would do. She'd call me up and be like, so I had the most incredible shit. You would not believe it. And I'd be like, thank you. And that's what Sidney did to Peter as well.
We don't know because we only hear one half of the conversation. He's like, "No way. Was it big? Was it smelly? What did it look like?"
Oh, that was a shit that he was talking about. That was for sure a shit that he was talking about.
Maybe it was Anwar's shit, though, his little doggy. Maybe his little doggy laid an epic shit right in the middle of the sidewalk that he decided to stop and describe to his best friend because, you know, he's not picking it up.
No, but I do think that if it were a different day and age, he would have video chatted with him and and like shown him in video, full video the color. Shit. The shit, yes.
Of the shit. And eventually, Peter also meets Sidney's three childhood friends for an afternoon hike, where they swap back-in-the-day stories. At the end of the hike, Sidney invites everyone over. He's bought a 6-foot sub sandwich. But his friends decline. They have families and work they need to get back to. Peter also has plans with Zoe, but when he sees the disappointment on Sidney's face, he agrees to stay. And we finally get a hint of why Sidney befriended Peter so quickly. All of his older friends are moving on with their busy lives and can't hang out as much. Peter's a good friend and tells Sidney, "I can't just leave you to eat a 6-foot sub all by yourself." And that night, Peter and Zoe talk at home over the 3 feet of sandwich that Peter got sent home with. I'd be so fucking jazzed. Zoe asks when she's going to meet the new man in Peter's life, and he says, "Soon, I'm going to invite him to our engagement party and introduce him to Haley." Ooh, Zoe likes this idea and is curious about what the two of them do for 7 hours at a time. Peter tells her about their jam sessions to Rush songs, and she's surprised he plays an instrument and is also confused and asks, "Rush? Like speed metal?" Peter's gobsmacked that she's not familiar with one of his favorite bands and busts out his computer to introduce her. He sets it up and asks, "Are you ready to get Rushified?" She gamely says, "Do it!" Encouraged, he adds, "Do you want some Neil Peart all up in ya?" Her face falls because she's not sure she wants to agree to that. The computer flips on and plays the song Limelight. But since the speakers are tiny, it doesn't give Zoe the full rocking out experience. So Peter decides to air guitar along with the song.
Thank goodness.
His hands are up by his nipples as he riffs along, and Zoe asks, Is that how you play the bass in real life? Peter says, not in real life, but an air guitar is best played high up. He gets into it as he crows in a wannabe Rastafari accent that sounds more like a leprechaun. I'm slapping the bass. I'm a slapping the bass. I'm a slapping the bass.
What in the Irish spring hell? Yes.
Zoe giggles as he dances around, and we could see the influence Sydney's having on Peter because he's clearly lightening up and having a lot more fun.
Yes, although I question his idea to introduce Sydney, who likes to sleep with recent divorcees, to Haley.
Yeah, that's, I would think that wouldn't end well.
Yeah.
I would see the two and be like, no, I'm not going to try to push them together.
No, no. I'm not introducing Sydney to any of my single female friends. Thank you very much. I will actually give them a little warning and I'll say, hey, if you want a one night stand, he may be your man. But if you want anything beyond that, Godspeed.
See, but Peter's not well versed in guy friends. He just is like, if I get Sydney to date Haley, he'll be in my friend fold and then we could all go out together.
Oh my God, that's such a good idea, except it's a terrible idea. But it's such a good idea. I totally agree with you. Okay, I'm on board. Speaking of which, by the way, then, I'm so embarrassed. What's your fucking boyfriend's name?
Oh my God, you better keep this in so I could play it for him and be like, look at, this is what Corinne thinks of you. She doesn't even remember your name.
It just like
left. It rhymes with Barry.
Larry! Okay.
Yes. Ding, 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 ding.
Speaking of which, that's such a good idea. Does Larry have any good single friends for me?
No.
Oh, okay.
He does not.
Just thought I'd check. A few nights later, Zoe, Peter's family, and a few close friends gather at a Chinese restaurant for the engagement party. Sydney arrives and is finally introduced to Zoe. Sydney tells her, Peter is gaga for you. It's pretty adorable how smitten he is. Then Sid is introduced to Haley. And she comes on a very, very strong. If she were compared to a person wearing cologne or perfume, they would have bathed in it. They would have like had a jacuzzi tub of it and then been walking around. Like it was
very
a lot.
Strong.
Yeah,
it was a lot.
Sid is polite but uninterested. Everyone gathers in a private room for dinner, and as everyone sits around the table, Mama Clavin makes a toast, telling the table that she's picked this restaurant on purpose because it's Peter's favorite to bring all his first dates. But after he brought Zoe, he called up his mom and told her that Zoe was the woman he was going to marry. And not because she ordered a second helping of slippery shrimp. Mom concludes the toast by saying, here we all are 8 months later, and we wish Peter and Zoe the best, and we love you. Then, unexpectedly, Sydney asks if he can say something. Will this be the best toast ever, or will this be a flaming train wreck?
I'm going to say train wreck because that would be funnier.
Find out with us after the break. And we're back. And oh, gentle listeners, it's a shit show of a speech. Train wreck, choo-choo. Sydney stands, addresses the table, and says, Zoe, you're about to marry one of the most honest, kind, and fun-loving people I've had the honor of knowing. Yes. Good one. Pistol is a pleasure giver, that's for sure. Heh? And Peter never asks for anything in return. Which is why I'm here as his friend and confidante, asking you, beautiful Zoe, to give it back. He winks at her as he says this and adds, return the favor and I'll guarantee you, you'll have a beautiful and pleasure-filled union. The whole table quiets as the realization sinks in about what he's insinuating. Denise's dickhead husband, Barry, whispers loudly to her, I don't think she sucks dick. We cut to the car ride home. Zoe's glaring at Peter while he drives and finally asks, what did you tell Sydney about me? Peter admits that he did tell him a little about their sex life, and she squeals in disgust, saying, ew, Peter, that stuff's private. He points out that she tells her friends everything under the sun about their sex life. she argues. It's because she's known her friends forever, and Sydney's like a stranger. Peter disagrees, countering, he's become a really good friend, and now you know how I feel when there's no privacy between you and your girlfriends. Zoe can see his point of view and agrees in the future not to spill everything to her girlfriends. She also shares that she does not, that she doesn't not like giving blowjobs. It's just her last boyfriend had intimacy issues and didn't like getting them. They agree to work on it, and everything said and done, he's glad he told Sydney about their sex life because it led to a mutually beneficial resolution. Yay! Blowies for everyone! Woo!
Peter in that moment says, who doesn't like getting blowjobs? And Larry, who doesn't like getting blowjobs? I'm like, is there a guy alive that doesn't like getting blowjobs? I'd like to meet them and have a discussion. The next time Peter sees Sydney, they're hanging out in the man cave comparing pineapples. That's not a euphemism. And this is something I felt that me and you would do, Corinne, because they're both eating pineapples with a spoon.
Yeah.
And Peter says, do you want to compare pineapples? Because they got them from a fruit vendor. And so they hold up their halves of the pineapple together. And Sydney says, nope, your pineapple's short and fat and mine's tall and skinny. It was a cute moment. And Sydney asks Peter if he could be a tree and listen for a second, and then profusely apologizes for the wedding toast blunder. He was so excited when he met Zoe and Peter's family that he blurted out that redonkulous speech. Peter agrees it wasn't great, and Sydney groans that everybody must hate me. Peter disagrees, especially Haley. She really didn't hate him, and they should all go out.
Oh.
Sydney admits that Haley was funny, but within 5 minutes of meeting, she was talking about how she couldn't wait to get married and have kids, and he is so not into that. Peter assures his friend that she was just messing around, and he already booked a tea time for the four of them to play golf next Sunday. Sydney protests emphatically, saying, I told you, Peter, I don't play sports with women. But Peter looks at him squarely in the face and reminds him, you told my fiancé she needs to give me blowies in front of my whole family. You owe me. Sydney relents, saying, you raise a valid point. And Peter tries pumping him up by saying, come on, it's golf, it's fun. And no, we cut to them, and it was not fun. The doubled golfing date does not go well. Sydney gets whacked in the shin by one of Haley's rogue balls. They get heckled by more experienced players for holding up the game. And Haley gets pissed and sulks and ultimately leaves in the golf cart because the guys want her to play quicker, which upsets Zoe. So by the end of the date, everybody's irked. After the full day of playing golf, Sydney calls Peter almost as he walks into the door and asks what he's doing that night. Peter balks because they just left each other a half an hour ago, and he's got standing plans to watch HBO with Zoe, premium cable. Sydney knows, but he's just learned that Rush is holding a concert at a small venue nearby. Peter's tempted. He hasn't seen the band since the Signals tour, but can't ditch his fiancée again, so he thinks of a workaround and asks if Zoe can tag along.
And I gotta say, back to the golfing, that golfing is like Dungeons and Dragons for the country club set. It is an all-day commitment. This is not some little like, oh, we're going to hang out for a few hours together. This is like, oh, we're going to hang out all fucking day together. And so it's a lot. It's a lot.
I would not know. I have not played golf outside of the driving range and of the miniature status.
I love the miniature status. We cut to the Rush concert in Sydney. Peter and Zoe are in the stands enjoying the music. But as the concert progresses, Sydney and Peter begin air guitaring and lip syncing with each other to a near frenzy and completely ignore Zoe. When Sydney lifts Peter up on his shoulders, oh shit, he is fucking tall. And I don't know if we actually have said who plays him, Jason Segel.
Oh yeah, sorry, Jason Segel is Sydney. After all the people, even Dolo Truglio, I did not say Jason Segel. Shows how much I think of Jason Segel. No, I just forgot to put his name in.
When Sydney lifts Peter up onto his shoulders, and so Jason Segel, I mention him, is because he's very tall. Zoe clearly mouths, what the fuck? After the concert, Peter and Sydney are on the phone talking about the set list. And once he hangs up, Zoe shares her feelings about feeling invisible and being weirded out by Peter licking Sydney's imaginary face. Hello. Peter tries arguing. Lots of guys were licking each other's bases. And if you take the B away from bases, you have asses. Just saying. But the statement fizzles because he realizes now how weird it sounds. Zoe argues back that she feels like she's losing him. But when he doesn't get it, she gives up and walks away. The next day, Peter takes Sydney with him tuxedo shopping for the wedding. And he says, Zoe and I have been arguing a lot recently. Sydney asks, okay, so why are you marrying her? Is she the one or is she simply the next one? And he says this because Peter had mentioned that he's kind of a serial monogamist.
No lash between the vag.
Yeah, no lash between the vag. And Peter doesn't really have a good response other than, we love each other. Inside the dressing room, as he's trying on a tuxedo, Peter tells his friend that he's thinking of taking Tevin up on his offer to share the Hulk's real estate listing because I'm just not getting any traction. No, just say no to Tevin. No. Sydney's against it and yells, I pissed on that guy's face in a Bennigan's. You don't need a split commission with that frosty haired chod. What's a haired chod?
Chode.
Chode.
Frosty-haired chode. What's I don't even know what a chode was, therefore I don't know how to spell it.
I think it's probably balls or something. Anyways, Peter comes out in the first tux and Sydney tells him he looks stiff. Sydney takes out his camera and challenges Peter, give me some action poses. Peter mimes some running stances, which is exactly what I would do if somebody told me to give some action stances. And Sydney directs him to think more like James Bond a la Timothy Dalton. Peter quickly falls into character. We say that with air quotes. And Sydney snaps some shots and encourages Peter to step up his suit game. He passes Peter a shiny blue tuxedo jacket. And Peter protests, this is too flashy. I can't pull it off. Sydney tells his friend, you've got this image of yourself. And I'm like, this, okay, this is such a beautiful line. And I'm just like, oh, Sydney, you are a good friend. He says, you've got this image of yourself that's straight-laced and tight, but when you cut loose in the man cave, it's majestic. And it's the same with the Ferrigno, a.k.a. the Hulk, house. You have all the skills, but no confidence. This gets Peter back in the dressing room with the blue suit. As he's changing, Sydney asks him for a small loan. He yells over the dressing room door from the other room, I've got a great investment deal, but my cash is all tied up in investments right now. I just need $8,000. Peter's leery. I don't know. Zoe and I are paying for the wedding ourselves. Your timing isn't great. Can you give me some details about the investment? Sydney responds, sorry, bro. It's hush hush. Peter says, I'll think about it. And Sydney assures, no problem. It's okay if you can't.
When I first watched this movie, I felt a little like knife in my back and I'm like, oh no, this is it. He's a con man. He's a swindler. Like he was just playing you up like, I'm your best friend and then I'm going to borrow $8,000 and ghost the fuck out of you.
Well, and his card is like private investments. And you're like, what kind of fucking private investments are these? Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of investments or how successful are you as an investor if you need $8,000 from your friend?
Yeah. Asking for a friend. Exactly. Yeah.
Just as they're warmly patting each other on the shoulder in the tuxedo showroom, who should appear but dun 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 Doug, the non-reciprocated smoky kisser that Peter went out with. Doug misreads the scene and lays into Peter about being ghosted after sharing a very special kiss and how Peter's lips tasted like betrayal. Peter argues, it wasn't the taste of betrayal, and tries to explain, but Doug ain't having it. He calls Peter, you're a fucking whore, and leaves in a huff. In a huff!
In a huff!
Peter turns apologetically to Sydney and says, I can explain that. And Sydney, snickering, says, oh, I'd love to hear this. They leave the store and walk around outside. I think it might be the Grove.
Ooh.
The Grove Mall, where they have the oldest farmer's market in L.A. Go see it if you're in town. Peter admits he was looking for friends after he overheard Zoe's Girls' Night In. Sydney figured that Pete didn't have a lot of friends when he got invited to the engagement dinner, but didn't realize it was to fill out his wedding party. Peter admits that he actually gave up trying when Sydney wandered into his open house. He wishes Peter were honest about things, but Peter admits, I was embarrassed. You've had a core group of guy friends your whole life, and I haven't. I started feeling like some weirdo. Sydney's understanding and assures him, Peter, we're friends, and you could always tell me anything. They stop in front of a beautiful fountain, and Peter turns towards him, and if there was a kiss tractor beam anywhere in LA, it would be here, because this fountain dancing behind them is majestic and would be a great place to kiss. But not for these two. Peter agrees to lend Sydney the money. He knows he'll be able to manage it because he is going to sell that Fregno place. And he knows Sydney's good for it. And finally adds, and it's the least I can do for my best man. Aww. Sydney's face softens as he stammers that, I would be honored, Peter. He drops his shopping bag and grabs Peter in a hug. Doug, coincidentally, speed walks by and says, you're a whore, Peter. Peter's head follows Doug's retreat, but his best man gently guides his head back into his shoulder because they're having a moment and they need to sit in it for a little bit.
He pats his head affectionately. I was like, yeah, rub it in the dog, rub it in. The next day, Zoe and Peter are trying to work out the seating chart for the wedding reception, and Peter wants to put Sydney at the head table as he's the best man. Zoe seems less than thrilled and admits, I don't think Sydney likes me very much. Peter disagrees. No, he just doesn't know you. I'll talk to him. Zoe's livid. Don't talk to Sydney about this. He'll think I'm saying things behind his back. Peter points out, isn't that what you're doing? But she counters, it's different with couples. And Tamara says,
you gotta have the couple cone of silence.
And I say, you gotta have the Betsy cone of silence as well.
Yeah. I used to tell everybody everything. And my sister, she admitted not too long ago, she's like, yeah, she said something that was kind of surprising. And I told her, like, I can't believe you didn't tell me that. And she goes, oh, yeah, it happened when you were with Dan. And a long time ago, when you and Dan were still, like, maybe in your first few years together, You told him something that upset me, and you said verbatim, if you don't want me to know, don't tell me, because anything you tell me, I will tell Dan. So then, like, the whole fucking 17 years that followed that, my sister didn't tell me all the nitty-gritty dirty details because she knew I would turn around and tell Dan.
Oh my gosh.
So there's countless stories I wasn't privy to because I did not have a couple or a bestie or a sister cone of silence.
Oh. And also, somebody expressing that they think that somebody doesn't like them is not really talking behind their back. It's just...
No.
It's just kind of hashing things out. There's a difference.
Observations.
Yes. Peter agrees that he won't say anything. The couple's cone of silence. However, that's not what happens, because the very next day he's hanging out with Sydney, walking Anwar the Puggle. And when Sydney asks, so what did Zoe say about me being your best man? Peter initially badly lies. She loved it. She thinks it's the best idea ever. And Sydney calls him out, and Peter confesses Zoe's feelings. Sydney is bummed about this, but blames himself for making that stupid toast. Just then, they happen upon an outdoor cafe where Tevin is having lunch with dun-dun-dun, Lou Ferrigno, the Hulk, a.k.a. the Hulk. Sydney goes from 0 to 9.5. Okay, what? 9.5 of what?
You know, when you go from 0 to 10, like your temper-wise, where it just like snaps on. Oh, okay. So he doesn't go quite to 10, but he goes to like 9.5.
Nice. Thank you. Exclaiming, dude, why is Ferrigno eating with that urinal cake fuckhead? We got to confront them. He hands off Anwar's leash to Peter and storms over to their table yelling, Peter has the exclusive listing on your house. Lou argues, yeah, but Peter's not doing shit with the listing. And in a misguided attempt to further stick up for Peter, Sydney points at Lou, putting his finger in his face saying, Hulk, Peter is the guy for you. This stuff doesn't happen overnight, Hulk. Lou stands up. Get your hand out of my face and stop calling me Hulk. I'm a person, okay? While this is happening, Zoe calls and hears Sydney yelling, fuck you, Lou Ferrigno! Fuck you, Hulk! And is understandably worried. Peter watches paralyzed, trying to talk to Zoe and also trying to figure out how to handle the Sydney situation. Meanwhile, Sydney throws a punch at Lou, who effectively catches it with his hand, which happened to me kind of one time when I tried kicking a person who was giving me shit, and she grabbed my leg. And I was just stuck there with my foot up in the air. So, I feel ya. Lou takes the hand, twists him around, and puts Sydney in a sleeper hold. Lou whispers softly to Sydney, "Easy, easy," as Sydney yells, "I'm in a sleeper hold and I don't think I can..." And he starts snoring as Lou gently releases him onto the sidewalk. Later that day...
Oh, your fight scene was so much better than I wrote it. This was like hour 71. I'm like, I can't. My eyes are blurry.
I was like, I hope that Tam doesn't mind that I'm like elaborating on
no,
this
part. No.
Later that day at home, Zoe asks, who the fuck would attack Lou Ferrigno, aka the Hulk? Peter explains, Sydney's a hothead and he thought he was defending me. And this also means that his development dreams are kaput without the commission. Zoe suggests, why don't you dip into your savings and write a goodwill check to hold the property? Peter sheepishly confesses, between the wedding and, he says softly, I lent Sydney some money. I can't come up with a deposit. He tries to gloss over that last little detail, but Zoe's not having it. Peter, we're getting married. If you're going to do something like that, I should know about it. This prompts Peter to ask Zoe, why do you think we're getting married? Zoe's confused. Excuse me? And Peter says, well, when I was trying on tuxes, Sydney asked me why I was marrying you, and I didn't have a good answer for him.
Don't want to say that, Peter. Nope, don't. You don't want to say that.
Peter, don't do it. Don't do it. If I could turn back time. Oh, that would be one of those moments for Peter. Zoe gets understandably upset at this question and the fact that he's a mere 2 weeks away from the wedding. And she says to him, I get that you're asking the question. I just wish you would have asked it before you popped the question. He explains, that's the thing. I never thought of it before. He realizes how that sounds and quickly tries to turn back time. But the damage is done. Zoe leaves in a huff to stay with Barry.
In a huff!
Yes. With Barry and Denise.
The next day, Peter's pretty down as he takes his usual route to work. While going down a busy street, he notices a billboard with his picture doing the James Bond pose in a tuxedo. The words above him read, Peter Klavan, licensed to sell.
Wait, you gotta do it in your James Bond voice.
Oh, Peter Klavan, licensed to sell. I don't know how to do to T. Dalton. T. Dalton, I don't know. It'll sound like a leprechaun, I'm sure. There's another one of him in a cowboy hat and a handlebar mustache that reads, Pistol Pete Klavan, fastest realtor in the West.
Now you got to do your old-timey minor voice.
It's a Pistol Pete Klavan, fastest realtor in the West.
Yay!
And another with him in a banana hammock with a very prominent bulge, laying in bed shirtless, a bus ad where he's dressed like a rapper, and one with Sydney's face asking, who's the best realtor in town? And a separate billboard a short ways down the road with Peter enthusiastically pointing to himself saying, I am, biatch! Each advertisement causes Peter to get more and more frantic. He rushes over to Sydney's house, bursts through the man cave door, and accuses, that's what you used the $8,000 for? Sydney smiles, thinking he's going to get thanked, but instead Peter rips into him about how idiotic that makes him look. He rants and accuses Sydney of screwing up his career and his relationship all in the same day. Sydney asks, whoa, how did I ruin your relationship? And Peter snaps back, Zoe walked out on me because I asked her why we were getting married. Sydney throws up his arms. Why would you ask her that? That was between me and you. You shouldn't have told her. Peter responds, I'm so sick of your rules. I think you're afraid of what Zoe and I have. You know, the best night I've had in the past 5 years was when me and Zoe shared a bottle of wine, made a summer salad, and watched Chocolat together. Sydney argues with the pronunciation of this movie, and they have a Chocolat off. Sydney tells Peter, you should be embarrassed that that's your best night. And Peter reiterates that Sydney is jealous of his relationship. Mm-hmm. Sydney argues that he has plenty of friends, but Peter points out that all of his friends are in relationships, having kids, and moving on. Sydney reminds him, you sought me out. I'm the used one.
Ooh.
And Peter quietly responds, I think we used each other. Then, like shots fired, Peter cuts his and Sydney's relationship down. Peter uninvites Sydney to the wedding, says they should spend some time apart, demands he take down the billboards that he put up, and finally, to add insult to injury, he takes back his season 2 lost DVD set. Sydney's super confused about the outcome with everything, but agrees to take the boards down and pay Peter back. He brusquely shakes Peter's hand goodbye, and they part ways. Possibly forever?
Forever!
Oh!
Forever! When I saw those billboards, I was like, oh, that is so sweet!
Yes! And they're funny, and they're memorable.
Yeah.
But Peter's just, it was too much. Too much too soon.
That was such a big display of faith that Sydney had in Peter, because he said to him, you know, you have all the tools, you're just afraid to let go for it. And so he's like, yeah, here's a little push for you. And
yeah,
and I just thought it was like the sweetest thing.
Whoa, the sweetest thing.
I also understand Peter being like mortified. Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter goes straight to Denise's house to win back his woman. While he's there waiting for her to come to the door, Barry passes by and compliments him on his billboards. Oh, sexy billboards you got there. Okay, if Barry likes them, though, I might question the billboards a little bit, but, you know, whatever. Barry has money, though, and he would buy houses, so never mind. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peter tries telling him about the Sydney fallout over them, but Barry doesn't give a fuck. Finally, Zoe appears and they talk outside. Peter apologizes profusely and they just like walk outside, leaving the front door open. I'm like, what is it? You just leave the door open?
It's not their house. It's Barry and Denise's house.
You live in LA. You got the air conditioning on. You want the Anyways, Peter apologizes profusely for doubting the reasons he wanted to marry her. Just talking about it with Sydney made him nervous. Zoe admits, I was nervous too. That's why when you started having doubts, I freaked out. Peter professes, I want to spend the rest of my life with you. Can we get this engagement back on track? Choo-choo. Zoe happily answers, yes. Choo-choo. And they kiss. But it's not a good one. I was like, that's a dry, not very passionate kiss. Okay. As they're kissing, Denise comes to the door and whisper argues with Barry, hissing, Zoe can stay for as long as she wants. I'll leave you before I leave her. Denise then announces to Zoe, who is standing several feet away in the front yard with Peter, Zoe, you can stay here for as long as you want. But Zoe tells her friend that she's going back home and then hisses to Peter, please get me out of here. They argue all the time and then have really intense makeup sex. As they go back inside to retrieve her things, Peter tells her that he ended it with Sydney. She's worried that she created the rift between the two, but Peter assures her, he's a great guy, but it just wasn't working out. And I say, boundaries, Peter. You've got to work on your boundaries. But figuring those out can be hard, especially when you haven't had practice with other friendships. We get another montage of Peter and Zoe back on track with their wedding plans. They're looking at seating charts and Peter gets sad when he sees Sydney's now empty spot. Zoe notices and encourages him to call Sydney, but Peter declines because guys don't do that.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do. Real men do. Meanwhile, Sydney turns into a bit of a sad sack, walking his dog in his bathrobe and trying to reach out to his other friends to hang when they all decline because they're busy with kids and their life. He practically begs, but is left alone. Peter also reaches out to his kitten fish, meow, 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 old friend Mel. They have lunch together. Mel divulges that he hasn't had a friend since his wife died, and he's glad Peter called. Peter's touched and asks Mel what he's doing June 30th. The sweet old man responds, I'm 89 years old. What the fuck of kind of plans would I have? And finally, Sydney, because no one wants to play with him, watches Chocolate.
Chocolat.
I'm sticking up for Sydney because that's how he pronounces it. And let me tell you, he found the movie to be delightful, okay?
He found chocolat to be delightful. I get it.
Chocolate, yes.
Fine. You say chocolate, I say chocolat. It's a couple of days before the wedding, and we see Peter tying up loose ends from work before he goes out of town. The receptionist at his office tells him, you got a ton of messages. And he sure does. A bunch of people saw his billboards, love them, and all want to work with him.
Yay.
One message is even an offer for the Frigno House, and there's one from Doug, who loved the ads and apologized for calling him a whore. And send my love to Sydney if you guys are still together. If not, call me. And one from Lou Ferrigno, a.k.a. the Incredible Hulk, who apologizes for doubting Peter's selling prowess and wants to give him the listing again. Peter looks at his corkboard where Sydney's business card still hangs before he's attacked from behind by Kevin. Whoop! There it is! Who's trying to be playful. Tevin likey the billboards and proposes they go out for beers and tag team ideas for the Frigno place. But Peter, finally fed up with Tevin's shit, stands up and slaps him across the face and tells him, stay away from my listings. Why a slap? Because Peter wanted to cause Tevin pain but never actually hit anybody. So that's the best he could do.
Hey, maybe Tevin and Peter can have couples toilet deodorizers with of their faces on them. Huh? Huh?
Yes, one could be saying, who's the best realtor? And the other one could say, I am, biatch, and the next urinal over. Peter happily skitters out of the office and into his new life with Zoe. That's going to start in just a couple of days. We next see everybody at the wedding venue in Santa Barbara. Zoe and Haley are having mimosas and getting ready, and Haley wonders aloud who Peter's going to have in his wedding party. They don't have to wait long because around the corner becomes Peter with his crew. It consists of his dad Oswald, brother Barry, squeaky soccer guy, 89-year-old Mel, Doug, who's giving Barry serious I want to fuck you eyes, and finally, Lou Ferrigno. Zoe remarks, honestly, that has to be the most random collection of groomsmen in wedding history. A short while later, Zoe spies Peter by himself, sadly slapping his imaginary base alone as he looks over the water. And then we cut to Sydney on his scooter riding down the street. His phone rings and whoever he's talking to invites him to the wedding. He thanks them saying, I gotta find something to wear, but I'll try to hurry over and hopefully I'll catch the end of the reception. But when the camera pans out, we see that he's already heading to Santa Barbara and is 40 miles away. And Santa Barbara's about 90 miles from Venice Beach, so he's about halfway there.
Yay! And he's dressed appropriately. The ceremony is about to begin when the preacher asks who's going to hold on to the rings. Peter admits he doesn't have a best man and asks his brother Robbie if he wouldn't mind. Robbie is so moved, he hugs him. Papa Oswald puts a hand on both of his sons and says, I want you to know you're both my best friends. And Hank Mardukas. We know he doesn't mean it in regards to Peter, but it's nice of him to say. Papa Oswald also gives a thumbs up to Hank Mardukas, who's sitting in the front row next to his wife, Joyce. And I'm suddenly wondering if they had some kind of a threesome going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Because they all looked way too happy to see each other. Yes. And Hank Mardukas. There's a reason why he's the best friend. He's in the couple and the best friend cone of silence all at once.
Uh-huh. I'm glad I wasn't the only one. Thank you. I feel so affirmed. So the ceremony gets underway when the officiant asks, is there anyone who objects to their union? And if I'm getting married, I'm taking that out of the script. That's nobody's asking that.
Oh, good. I'd be too tempted to come up with some smart-ass answer.
Sydney happens to pull up on his scooter at that exact moment, and Lou Ferrigno thinks Sydney's going to be an asshole and is like, oh, fuck no, and lunges for him. But Sydney assures him, well, no, I'm there under honorable pretenses. Zoe motions to him to come join the wedding. She's the one that called, and Peter is surprised. and fucking Sydney, he does the wedding walk with down the aisles.
Yes, he does. The step pause, yeah. Step pause, step pause towards them.
Yeah. It was really sweet. Zoe admits that she saw Peter looking sad earlier and knew he couldn't get married without his best man. Sydney admits that he was already on his way, even though he wasn't invited, because there was no way he was going to miss Peter's wedding. He also hands Peter a check for $8,000 and tells him, I know you don't believe it, but I'm a pretty successful investor. And I consider the billboards a wedding gift. Peter gets friend hearts in his eyes and tells his friend, those billboards really worked. Sydney figured after seeing Lou in the wedding party. The two friends lock eyes. Peter says, "I love you, man." Sydney responds, "I love you too, bud." Then they go back and forth. "I love you, dude. I love you, bro, Montana. I love you, Holmes. I love you, bro, Chacho. I love you, Tico, bro, he." Until finally, the official interrupts them to continue with the actual wedding. They do, and Sydney is proudly standing by Peter's side as he and Zoe say, "I do." And what about the wedding party, you may ask? Well, Peter and Sydney play a Rush cover with the wedding band, who is played by the band OK Go, for fuck's sake.
Yeah! Really?
Yes. Haley ends up with vocally challenged Lonnie, and Denise announces to Barry that she's pregnant by throwing up on him, and then they passionately kiss. Nothing like vomit mouth to entice one.
Yes.
Brother Robbie turns down old ashtray mouth himself, Doug, and Sydney tries to make a toast, but Peter shuts that shit down. So all's well that ends well. The end.
The end, the end, the end, the end.
Now, gentle listeners, so, Miss Tamara, what did you think of "I Love You, Comma Man"?
Well, before we jump into our ratings, we had a conversation over the break where we agreed that our ratings are kind of all over the place. Yeah. Because sometimes I love a movie and give it a 3, and sometimes I don't like a movie and I also give it a 3. We came up with the kiss rating gauge.
Yes.
Would you want to list it off, Corinne?
1 kiss. Do not watch. It's shit. 2 kisses. If you only had 3 channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buy yourselves knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. So many regrets.
That's oddly specific.
You came up with that, and I'm here for it. 3 kisses. Yay! Would kiss this movie again. It's like something that you would just... It's a movie you'd watch again. 4 kisses. The date night you've been waiting for. Break out those candles, baby. And 5 kisses. If this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by cute cartoon animals, some squirrels immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a unicorn.
Well, then I think I'm going to give this 4.5 dry kisses.
Nice.
I do love this movie. I always watch it whenever it comes on. I constantly quote it. Bro Montana, Bro Chacho, Latris on the Menjay, Jobin, many, and the list goes on and on. Was everybody the right fit for their character? Maybe not, but, you know, it still worked. It still had a powerhouse cast.
Yes.
We have our whole other section about diversity. Was it that diverse? Not particularly. Rashida Jones is half black. Lou Ferrigno is hearing impaired. There was the gay representation, but they were both played by straight men. And
the main gay representation was kind of...
Yeah. It's like questionable. Was it questionable? And then they had just the random, like, and Aziz Ansari was in there. I think Kim Whitley was in a very small part as Peter's coworker. But overall, like, I do enjoy this movie. I love to see the two worlds meshing together, like a guy that's trying to find a friend, a guy that needs more friends but doesn't have enough to play with, and the fact that I felt Peter so strongly in all his mispronunciations and made up words. Like, you don't see that in scripted movies. And I really appreciated that. And I love you, man. Because he's like, I fucking said Jif. I said Jobin. I said catch you in a mo. Who says catch you in a mo? And so on and so forth. So, Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give this movie?
I want to thank you, Tamara, for bringing this movie back into my life. Because I saw it once and I was like, meh about it. But when I watched it this time, it fucking lit up my life. It was the perfect movie to kick off Friendsuary with, because it had, like, friendship to the max in it. And it was so fucking good. 4 dry kisses. I wholeheartedly give it 4 dry kisses. I laughed throughout the movie. This movie gave me so much joy. It was awesome.
I would have given it 5 dry kisses if Sydney picked up after his fucking dog.
Amen to that. I agree with everything you said about the movie. And if we move on to the 3 Musketeers of Diversity.
We do have a few new categories. that we are going to try. And yeah, this was one of them, the Three Musketeers of Diversity.
Body diversity, I would say that musketeer is gone. No musketeer there.
Yes. We have body diversity, sexual diversity, racial diversity. The only body diversity that we did see was Barry, a.k.a. Denise's husband, because at one point she calls him a fat man with a small dick and a Jufro.
Oh, wow.
So, bold. Yeah, that's the only indication of body diversity. And it's not very good. Not very good.
Yeah. Sexual diversity, we did have a couple of gay characters, as Tamara pointed out. Yes.
I also appreciated the fact that when Peter got kissed, he didn't go, oh my God, don't kiss me. He's like, there's a fucking guy kissing me. I'm just going to stand here and take it.
Yeah. And afterwards, he wasn't like, oh, I'm wiping my mouth. Oh, this is so horrible.
Well, he did, but that was for the cigarette smokes.
That's a different issue. Yes.
I do have to say, I also kind of appreciated the point where Barry converted a straight man. I know that's like not the best scenario, but it's kind of funny to see like women will always like succumb to men's wiles and be like, oh, but I couldn't help it. He just had this spell over me. So the fact that it was kind of like flipped on its ear with Barry and the married man was I enjoyed that.
I mean, shit, the married man even got taken as the date to the engagement dinner. Yeah. So there you go.
He did. Yes, he did.
And racial diversity, Tamara also covered that great with Rashida Jones. It wasn't super strong. It had Rashida Jones. It did have like a little diversity sprinkled throughout the cast.
Little being the operative word.
Yeah. Like Aziz Ansari. But he had like a very small role, you know, just different things like that. But it wasn't, it was pretty minimal. And
now we have our final category. In addition to our new Three Musketeers of Diversity, we also have something called our grab bag ratings, a.k.a. spin the bottle ratings, where we're going to randomly draw two wild card topics from our hat of tricks and answer the questions.
What you getting?
So the first grab bag rating, the question is, Corinne, who is coming to our pizza party? Also known as, if we could hang out with one person in this movie, who would it be and why?
Ooh, so many. I'm sorry, Andy Samberg. Robbie, you are not invited to the pizza party. Okay, this is an odd response, but I got to do
it. I'm here for it. I'm ready.
J.K. Simmons, Oswald, a.k.a. Dad.
And why is that, Corinne?
Hey, it's someone who I just want to sit down and talk with. So I'm like, I think he'd be super interesting. So yeah, sign me up. Second person I'd invite would be Zoe, for sure. And third person I would invite would be Peter. I think we'd get along like gangbusters.
I see myself a lot in Peter. I do. I would want to do Peter and Zoe and Oswald too. But I think the main person that I would want to invite to our pizza party is Lou Ferrigno, a.k.a. The Incredible Hulk.
Because
I want to fucking learn this man's story. He was hearing impaired when he became a bodybuilder. He got this like iconic role in the 70s as The Incredible Hulk. And throughout the movie, Peter, because he's like playing himself in real life, Peter refers to Lou Ferrigno as just the sweetest man. Like, he's just so kind and gentle. So it's so funny. I just like, I want to know what makes him so hard and strong and then conversely in real life, just a really sweet guy.
No. Yes. That was the first one that you picked out of the hat. What is our next?
Our second question in our dry kiss rating is the alternate movie title. So this movie is called I Love You, Man. Corinne, if you had to name this movie anything else that would maybe that might be more appropriate, what would you call it?
I need a moment. Tamara, what is your answer?
Mm-hmm. I do. I have a good one. Instead of calling it I Love You, Man, a possible alternate movie title would be Rushing Into Friendship. Get it? Because they play Rush, the band music.
Oh, nice. Okay. I like
that. Either that or Pick Up Your Dog Shit, Sydney. Would be my secondary title.
Catchy. Pick up your dog shit. Dog
beep, beep, beep. Relevant. Catchy, relevant.
Mine would be Friend Quest.
Oh, yes. Friend Quest.
Yes.
It sounds like they should be like walking across rugged mountain terrains in armor. That's what that puts me in mind of.
Yes. Friend Quest. So, with that, Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week is Kissing Booth, even though Corinne fucked with me at the top of this movie and told me that that's what we were doing this week.
Yes. Oh, I am so excited. Tam, I have to tell you, I got all wrapped up in the script. I got into those kisses. I'm ready. I can't wait for One Dry Kiss to get its kiss on.
Kiss on.
If you have anything you'd like to say about I Love You, Comma Man, The Kissing Booth, Picking Up Your Dog Do, anything else, you can reach out to us. You can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or via the social medias on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. So eager to see some of those coming down the pipeline if you have the time. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time.
Latris on the Menjay.
Latris on the Menjay.